Pushkin. There's no stopping Burt Bacharach. He's a gifted composer who's been writing pop hits for artists like Dionne Warwick, Elvis Costello, and Dusty Springfield since the 50s. He even wrote Aretha's iconic I Say a Little Prayer. Now, at 92 years old, Burt's found a new muse.
I search the sky, I search the night, I search my heart for signs of life. Still, I must keep my love alive on the midnight watch.
That's Daniel Tashin singing. In late July, Burt Bacharach and Daniel released the 5-song EP, Blue Umbrella. They might seem like an unlikely duo. Daniel is a Nashville-based singer-songwriter whose connection to country music runs deep. His parents were part of Emmylou Harris's backing band, and he just won Album of the Year at the Grammys for co-writing and producing Kacey Musgraves' breakout, Golden Hour. Burt, on the other hand, is a living legend and made his career writing R&B hits for the likes of Roberta Flack and Tom Jones. But as you'll hear in this interview with Bruce Headlam, Burt and Daniel are a perfect match. Daniel talks about learning to navigate Burt's tricky trademark compositions, and Burt says writing for Daniel has given him new life.
This is Broken Record, liner notes for the digital age. I'm Justin Richmond.
Here's Bruce Headlam in conversation with Burt Bacharach and Daniel Tashin.
Burt, you once said that you didn't know that a song was going to work until you were in the recording studio, until you had the musicians there. What's it like sending something and going, well, I don't know what it's going to sound like because I can't be there?
Always for me, in the past, when I knew people would be there all in the same studio, I lived by the credo of it was the moment of truth. You lived or died with that song in the studio. It felt good going in, but things could go wrong in the concept. I had this habit. I don't know whether I ever told you, Daniel. When I got in trouble on a date and I had string players out there and something was amiss in the concept, the way the arrangement was going down, I'd give a break to the band, 10 minutes. I'd go into the bathroom, to the men's room, into a stall, just close the lid, sit on the stall, and try to hear this whole scope of where this record was going, where this song was going, and to make sure there were no pimples. If the pimples were there, the pimples drove me into the bathroom. And then you try to work it through, and you don't have anybody leaning on you. You're not at the piano trying to figure it out in a room full of musicians. So for me, it's the moment of truth. That's where you know you got something.
So I want to go back to how this collaboration started. It started with a meeting at your house, Burt, and I'd like to hear both of you just tell me a bit about how that came about.
Okay, Daniel's on a glow. Daniel's on a winning streak. Daniel's a very, very happy guy, and he had just won the Grammy for Producer of the Year on Kacey's record, which was a brilliant record. And you pick it up from there, Daniel.
Well, there's a lot of mystery for me around Burt before I met him. And, you know, they say you shouldn't meet some of your heroes because sometimes, you know, you can maybe not have the kind of interaction that you hope for. But in the case of me and Burt, and I do consider you to be one of my great heroes, Burt.
Thank you.
In that situation, I found you to be very warm and welcoming. You welcomed me into your music room, sort of a sunken kind of living room you kind of come down into, and there's a piano, and up on the wall, you know, are these Oscars and Grammys and Gershwin Award, and it's very very heady stuff for a guy like me. And but you had worked on some music for a little lyric shred that I had sent you, and I couldn't help it, man. The tears came to my eyes. It was so beautiful. I loved the way that you made the words that I had written kind of come to life in this way that I never could have thought of on my own. And it was just wonderful to be there in that room with you. And I was ensconced in a very comfortable armchair with a nice cup of tea. And you were playing to me right next to me on the beginning of Blue Umbrella. And it's a memory that I'll cherish all my life.
I could say this, the thing about Daniel, I don't think, you know, I've had different collaborations with Elvis or with Hal David, my ex-wife Carol Bayer Sager. There is something about this relationship as it's grown and expanded. We genuinely really like each other. And the more time that we work, connect, talk, there's no fear, you know, there's no, you know, you always have a, well, will this future collaborator be something that will like my music? Will it work? See, Daniel's in this, he's got all bases covered because he's, I love the way he sings, which I didn't know until I heard it. I love his musicianship. I love his words. And the thing that I find very interesting, because I think the work has been really productive and really good and proud of what we've done, Daniel.
Me too, Bert.
And the friendship has grown. So we'll talk at different times. We'll keep on writing. You know, we've got a couple of more songs in the pipeline now.
Yeah, we do.
And
some bangers.
And the same musicians, but they'll... Instead of all being in that studio, everybody will be in their own house, like in Nashville.
Yeah.
And being able to hear each other as parts are added. It's not the perfect solution, but the sound is good. That was one of my concerns, how it would sound. Stuff coming instead of off the board in a studio with all the gear, but it sounds really good. So that took any fears, concerns of new stuff that we would write. But I love it that we've done this thing with Blue Umbrella and
me too.
I'm proud of the songs and whatever happens with it, pride will always be there.
Yeah.
I want to go back to what you said about Daniel as a singer. I mean, he's mainly known as a producer. You know, not everybody can sing a Burt Bacharach melody. You've got a very particular flavor of melody. You play a lot with the rhythm or the beat, I guess the time signature. And obviously you've had some incredible collaborators who do, you know, starting with Dionne Warwick and many others. What does a good Burt Bacharach singer have to sing your songs?
Well, you don't know what you're going to get with Daniel, like, because we'd worked in a room till we got in the studio. But I never had any doubt that he's going to sing well. But when I heard him in the studio, he does his homework. He comes in prepared. I'm a big one on preparation. And then, it's like what works, it's all interchangeable. Half of it could work, half of it couldn't work. But we'll get through it. But our taste, we kind of understand each other. And in a very kind of sensible, loving way. He's my friend.
I love you too, Bert. I really do, man. And I think one thing a singer needs to do is to stick to the melody, because it's probably a good one, you know? And I think a lot of singers tend to kind of go into maybe areas where they feel like maybe more comfortable, like doing licks or something that they know they can pull off and that are crowd pleasers. And that doesn't really cut it with your music. You know, I think you've got to be the kind of singer that can stick to the ink. There was an outro and we were working in the studio and this was another one of those unforgettable moments, but I just had this, I was tempted to kind of veer off into some more sort of, dreadful kind of ad-libbing. He sort of said, gently, maybe let's not deviate here. You know, people think that, you know, someone who has some harmonic complexity to their music, like Bert, that you would think that he's interested in complexity, but he's actually quite interested in the opposite. He really loves simplicity. He really loves a simple, catchy song, you know.
Economics.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's not there is filling up a space sometimes that's very advantageous.
Mm-hmm. And the more I've gotten to know you, I mean, I honestly, you know, I really do like that about our collaboration, that I, the learning aspect of it for me, and the confirmation of things that I've instinctively felt, you know, I like that.
Can you give me an example when you said confirmation of things that you felt?
Well, that really, that the things that you love, that you and I love, and we listen to all the time, you know, if it's, name anything amazing, whether it's Beatles or whatever, you know, it's all really at the end of the day, something that's made sort of the spirit. It's made of the emotion. It's not the result of a lot of sort of strategic kind of, well, if I sing it, you know, this way here, that'll have the right effect. No, that's not the way you approach it. It's a feeling that you're feeling, and you're inside of that music. And I think, you know, Bert's music for me is very easy for me to, as a singer, to inhabit and to exhibit with a lot of natural feeling, because I do feel those melodies and I do feel those sentiments. So there's not a lot of strategy behind it. I think that's, you know, there may be strategy in arrangement and stuff like that, but when it comes to displaying or creating those moods, it's feeling. It's all about feeling and mood.
And it's growing together as the song moves on. As the song moves on and it takes shape and takes different turns and it evolves.
From the five songs on the EP, are there... Daniel, is there? Can you think of a particular song or passage that may sound like a distinctive Bert Bacharach melody that you just love singing, or that you found easy to sing, or that you found really hard to sing?
Well, they're all tough to sing, because what you realize once you get behind the wheel on these things is that there's specific jumps, which I would imagine it's similar to when an orchestral musician has to play a passage that they've got to make a jump that's at a significant distance. On the chorus of Bells of St. Augustine, for example, there's a jump there. It's not kind of, and it's not swooping. It's a specific set of notes that it's very fun to sing, but also if you're not in shape, you know, the muscles of the throat, you've got to sort of stick the landing, you know, otherwise you kind of come off of a jump and you'll be flat.
That's great.
Really? Do you remember the particular interval that it was?
So yeah, on the chorus of Bells of St. Augustine, there's a figure. And I love singing that so much. It's a specific series of notes that it's very easy to skid off the rails on that, especially on that bottom note. And so those are the challenges for me as a singer. You've got to like tighten your control up a little bit so you can nail those notes, you know. And there's no auto tune on this project. And I told Ryan, our wonderful engineer and mixer, that I really wanted to avoid any tuning, any artificial help. And just really as a singer, I wanted to grow. I wanted to learn, you know, and get better. And a great way to get better as a singer is to sing some of Bert's stuff, because there's no, you can't really fake it, you know?
Yeah.
If you ever go to St. Augustine, there's a chapel bell that chimes out the hour, in a garden wall by the iron gate. You can hear the bees buzz in the wildflowers. And if you see brighter than all of the lights in Rome, tell her that nothing holds a candle, and to find her
That was Bells of St. Augustine from Daniel Taschen and Burt Bacharach's EP, Blue Umbrella. We'll be back after a quick break. We're back with Bruce's conversation with Burt and Daniel.
So tell me about the first song you worked on from this great EP and how it started.
Blue Umbrella.
Yeah, I texted him basically some lyrics that I was kind of tossing around. And I've never worked that way before with just sending a lyric to someone. That's a first for me. I'm usually involved in people sitting together in a room with holding guitars and playing and singing together and trying to come up with something simultaneously. But it was another aspect of this process that was great, different for me in a good way.
And we've come a long way, Daniel.
We have.
And Burt, when you first got those lyrics, do you still play every day, or you try and get at the piano every day?
Not every day. Hey, this has kept a life going for me, this whole process with Daniel, with the EP, with promoting it, with believing in it, and writing new stuff, and a continuing process. We'll get 2-3 more songs done, and we'll do it remotely because that works.
Yeah.
We'll give the best of what we can do.
I think you did some great direction on Blue Umbrella. I'll tell you something funny about recording that song. When we were recording that, we had figured it out and we were playing it. And then when we would go to wonder where you are tonight, we go to that part. Yeah. And the drummer was like going to the ride cymbal, and the band was sort of flourishing on that section. And Burt got on the talkback in the studio, and he said, "It sounds like everybody's like going to the chorus." And we all kind of looked at him like, what is he talking about? And then I started to understand about the way that you're interested in developing, I think, things simmering a bit more, you know, and not kind of telegraphing your sort of, okay, now we're in the section that everybody's supposed to like kind of feel like, okay, now this is the point of the whole thing. But maybe instead of telegraphing what everybody should feel, it was more like let the notes and the chords do the heavy lifting and just everybody just hold steady. Man, that was such a lesson. That was so cool.
Absolutely. I do like a kind of seamlessness, if can be done, that one goes into the other without an announcement, trumpets blaring, you know.
That was Blue Umbrella, the title track from Daniel Taschen and Burt Bacharach's new EP. We'll be right back after this break. We're back with the rest of Bruce's conversation with Burt Bacharach and Daniel Taschen.
Now, Burt, had you worked from lyrics before? I know you used to often compose and then make up dummy lyrics and then Hal David or someone else. would provide lyrics. Did you ever have just a lyric sheet and you say, okay, now I got to create something from these lyrics?
Yes. Certainly did with Alfie, because it had to depict what the movie was about.
So Alfie came in, the words came in first?
Absolutely.
Oh.
And one of the hardest songs, because I wanted to make it perfect. And it dominated my life.
How long did it take you to write that?
3 weeks.
3 weeks?
Wow. Yeah, and I would go, maybe go to theater to see a play. But I'd been working on maybe the pimples in the song.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't enjoy the play. I would wind up leaving the theater, having solved nothing on Alfie, and not enjoy the play. And everything on Promises, when we did the musical.
Mm-hmm.
All the words, really, that Hal would have to come up. He couldn't write a melody out of a Neil Simon script, because the dialogue would go into a song, and it didn't seem to fit to sit down and imagine what the song might be, because you wanted to make, again, the seamless thing I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Go from the script, the dialogue continues into song, because it's just natural. Otherwise, I can't conceive of it doing it another way.
You know, a little bit what Daniel was talking about, that you didn't want people to feel the chorus too soon. It's a little characteristic of some of your songs, and Alfie's a good example, where sometimes you're not quite sure where it's going. Like, it's got a lot of momentum. And then when it ends up, because there's time changes and the harmony's complex.
Well, you see, yeah. See, with Alfie, that it took me to another place by having words, and became an 8-bar phrase, or it became a 6-bar phrase, or a 12-bar phrase, just by where the lyric took me.
Right. Wow.
I like very much writing to Daniel's words if he sends me. I mean, I had this one phrase on Blue Umbrella, the hook, the chorus, are you still under the same blue umbrella, you know? The way you spaced it out, you added an extra bar, so it became, are you still under the same blue umbrella? And it just, a change like that, splitting the word instead of going, are you still under the same blue umbrella? And that drove the next 4 bars just by that space.
Yeah, it continues to evolve. And, you know, Bert thinks about these things a lot. You know, he spends a lot of time, like I heard that, you know, Duke Ellington could write arrangements and orchestration in the middle of chaos with no piano. He could just take some paper out and write stuff. And Bert's the same way. He can sit down at his desk, no piano, and just write orchestration, write down violin parts, write down all that stuff. It's wonderful to work with Bert and watch the way that the musical ideas take shape for him, and be able to witness the process for Bert of how an initial seed of an idea can expand in his mind, and what is involved as you're building the structure of a song and a melody, what's involved for him, and what boxes does it have to tick? It's got to, you know, he's got to see the whole length of it, the whole way, all the way through. And then forgive me, Bert, if I'm, you know, telling your stories here for you, but
you're right on it.
But he's got to see the melody, the long line of the melody all the way through. And then we can start to navigate through there. But, you know, the collaboration is so great because we say yes to each other. You know, he says, I don't think that the string should come in the first chorus. And I don't say, no, man, we got to get them in there. And I just say, okay, Bert, that sounds great. Cause I trust you. And he trusts my words and the simplicity of whatever it is that I'm trying to express with that. He trusts it. He doesn't say, hey, we don't need to be singing about this right now. So we trust each other. And that's a beautiful thing.
It is, absolutely.
You know, we were talking about the feeling when you sit down in a movie theater and the lights go down and it's a Steven Spielberg film. You know that Steven's got you. He's gonna take you on that ride. There's a similar feeling with your music. People, you know, they know you're gonna hold them in the palm of your hand and carry them through that song with that that music.
Tell me a little bit about Whistling in the Dark, about the writing of that.
Yeah. Well, Daniel sent me a lyric.
Well, I'll just say real quickly about the lyric. I just wanted to make something. I like the phrase whistling in the dark because it sounds like somebody that's going through something hard and they're kind of consoling themselves by sort of trying to create an atmosphere of lightness, you know, within themselves. And we wrote that song before, you know, anybody knew anything about a pandemic or any of that kind of hardship that was about to occur. So there's something about Whistling in the Dark that's like, I'm feeling that song right now because I kind of have to take that song's advice and just keep your eyes on the horizon and keep your eyes on the light at the end of the tunnel, which, you know, it's going to come. It's going to be a minute, you know.
There was a hint of what was going on. I remember it was one of the last songs we wrote, and there was a sense of whistling in the dark. Yeah. And things are lonely. So it was almost indicative of what was to come. Do you feel that, Daniel?
Absolutely. And, you know, Whistling in the Dark is one of those examples of sometimes you'll sing about something as a singer and songwriter, and then you don't realize what you're singing about until later on it seems to take on, you know, more meaning, or you realize, oh, I was really trying to process this thing that was happening in my life. And that's a weird thing that, I don't know if you can resonate with that, Bert, but.
I think so. I think because there's an element in that song, like the intro, which is very dissonant, piano. And it's sort of like, where did that come from?
I wanted to ask you about the, it sounds a little like Thelonious Monk almost, like it's,
yeah,
like it's falling apart a little bit.
Right. And then the ending, is also basically asking a question with the strings. You know, where did that come from?
Do you remember writing that? That string part is beautiful, and the description of it is asking a question is so interesting. Do you remember writing that bit? What you were thinking, or how it came to you?
I knew I wanted to, and got a definite push from my partner here, really. Daniel saying, that thing you played on the piano, dissonant, very kind of weird. I love it. So it starts that way, and ends in a very weird way too.
the songs you're writing now, because most of these were started, you know, before coronavirus. What are the songs like now that you're writing?
Well,
every song is different. Yeah.
We were working on one of the songs, the newer song. It's called 21st Century Man. And it was a little bit of a piece of music that I had started. And I said to Bert, you know, do you want to work on something that I kind of got started on, but I sort of don't know where to go with it? And he said, sure, let's check it out. So I played this little bit for him. He said, I like that. So there was this one part where you're going that sounds like something I've heard before, and we can do better than that. And boy, did we ever. I thought that was interesting because I think I had come from sort of an environment. There's something about being a commercial songwriter in Nashville, and I've spent a lot of years here writing commercial songs very ineffectively, I might add. If you look at the statistics for the number of cuts that I've gotten versus the number of songs that I've turned in, it's pretty ridiculous. But I sort of came from this environment of like, it actually is a good thing if something sounds like something you've heard before, you know? And I feel like you kind of got me back on track, Bert, because really what I want to be is innovative in everything I do. I don't want to be sort of giving you a hook because it sounds like, oh, I've heard that hook before. You know, that's something I can get stuck in my craw. I want to innovate.
Me too.
And I think you definitely do. And I think my tendencies are sort of leaning more in that direction.
I want to make this conversation about the EP and the songs you're doing out because they're so good, not about your whole career, Bert, because that would take us a month. But just that story Daniel told of you saying, we can do better than that, is probably something everybody needs to hear, not just songwriters, but particularly songwriters. Where does that come from? You're now in your 90s.
Yep.
You're putting out sensational music.
Thank you.
And you're the guy saying, no, 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 we can do better than that. Where does that come from in you?
I think it's a growth process. Neil Simon, when we were doing Promises, one night made this comment. He said, you know, you can get older, get fatter, but you're not like an athlete who's finished at 32. He said, you get to be 80. That talent that you've got should be nourished. You won't fall back. If somebody says, hey, we got this new singer. Could you write some song for her and just make it sort of like Don't Make Me Over? I wouldn't know how to do that anymore. That's left me. You can't repeat.
Do you mean it's left you in that you don't remember how you wrote songs like that, or just that's not something you're interested in doing?
I couldn't do it because I did it once. And when it's done, don't repeat yourself.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say that the songs are just wonderful. And it is just a thrill to meet both of you. And I think what you're doing is exciting. And I think we can do better is something I'm going to remember the rest of my life.
Appreciate you.
Thanks, Bruce.
Yeah, you've been good, Bruce.
Thanks to Bert and Daniel for taking the time to chat with Bruce. You can hear all of our favorite Bert Bacharach compositions and his new EP with Daniel Tashin on our playlist at BrokenRecordPodcast.com. And be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/BrokenRecordPodcast. There you can find extended cuts of a lot of our past episodes, as well as new ones. Broken Record is produced with help from Jason Gambrell, Mia LaBelle, Leah Rose, Eric Sandler, and Martin Gonzalez for Pushkin Industries. Our theme music's by Kenny Beats. I'm Justin Richmond. Peace.